This is the 7-day intensive seminar, School of the Master, Lecture 10, My Body Reflect My Thoughts. And let's go to the one in here on page 7. Oh, well, you don't know it. It's in this booklet if you've got any of the booklets here. And it goes, if a body wants a body that is well and strong, he must think a perfect body, think it all day long. Make your mind acknowledge your body perfect, perfectly. You'll demonstrate a perfect body.
Even you and me.
Okay, that's cool. Let's go. If a body wants a body that is well and strong, he must think a perfect body, think it all day long. Make your mind acknowledge your body perfect, perfectly. You'll demonstrate a perfect body, even you and me. Once again. If a body wants a body that is well and strong, he must think a perfect body, think it all day long. Make your mind acknowledge your body perfect, perfectly. You'll demonstrate a perfect body, even you and me. And then we have another one here. The words are kind of difficult. I have such a wonderful memory. I have such a wonderful mind. I have such a wonderful memory. I have such a wonderful mind. I am God. I am God. I have such a wonderful memory. I am God. I am God. I have such a wonderful mind. Beautiful. So today, we're going to talk about my body reflects my thoughts. I look at my body and observe how it appears to be, and then note how certain thoughts brought about certain effects. And second point, I look at my body and see it as an illusion. Then I create it as a new illusion of my current choice. And the fourth point here, I give my brain an energy massage and observe how it tingles with vibrations and energy I had not noticed before. And our fourth point, all illness or body form is the result of my thought. I do not concern myself with what is, rather what I choose to experience. So these are things that are very important for all of us and things that we want to pay attention to because we want to have the effects of that in the most beneficial way. Now, I look at my body and observe it, how it appears to be, and then note how certain thoughts brought about certain effects. Do we pay attention to how thoughts bring about effects in our life? And the answer is no. Why don't we pay attention to how thoughts bring about effects in our life? Because we are not concerned with past experiences. We're only concerned with current experiences. If we start concerning ourselves with past experiences, we will never be on into the current now, into the present moment, into what we're doing right now. And that's all that matters. Nothing else matters. I look at my body and observe how it appears to be, and then note how certain thoughts brought about certain effects. Do you understand that? Do you understand that?
Yes.
What did that sentence say to us? What does it say?
That what I thought, what I experienced, I have thought.
What you think is what you experience in your life. What you experience in your life is what you thought. Now, you don't know precisely what you thought that brought about certain things in your life that you don't like or do like. You just thought. Now, purposefully, you will think thoughts to bring about effects that you want. So, what do you say for yourself? What do you say for yourself?
I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace.
I repeat that.
I like me, I'm divine order, I am peace.
Oh, it's so wonderful to hear you. I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace. I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace. I like me, I'm divine order and peace. If you were so ignorant, so stupid, so useless, so purposeless as to have nothing to do all day long except I like me, I'm divine order and peace, you know what would happen to you? you'd be an absolute genius. Your body would be absolutely perfect. Your mind would be thrilled and tickled with all the goodness and understanding that ever existed. You would be spiritually illumined. I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace. If you have the guts to say that to yourself 957 million times a day, more or less, you know, plus or minus, you will experience magic in your life. And I'm not kidding you. And most of you don't believe that. Well, some of you don't believe that. Most of you don't believe it. And you know why I say most of you? Because if you have any little thing in your life that you don't like, you haven't been telling yourself that you are what?
I like me, I'm divine order and peace.
I like me, I'm divine order and peace. Somewhere in your world, you have not been saying that to you. Somewhere. And because somewhere you've been saying, not been saying that to you, you have not been experiencing it. Now, Rochelle, why is it that you're not experiencing it? Why is it that you're not experiencing it? What is it that you are not informing to experience that?
I'm not programming my...
I am not programming my stem cells. Could not have been said better. I am not programming my stem cells if I'm not experiencing the wholeness that I want to experience. Do you understand that?
Mm-hmm.
It's just that simple. Because these 10,000 guys are popping out of our brain every single day, and they're saying, "What would you have me do, Master? What would you have me do?" And they're calling you Master. I mean, you didn't even call yourself Master. Do you call yourself Master? Ha, ha, ha. You may think of yourself as a Master, but you don't call yourself a Master. But your stem cells all call you Master, and they say, "What do you want from me, Master? I'm a lonely little petunia in a potato patch, and I have nothing to do. I want to do something. I don't want to be a potato. I'm a petunia. And I'm a lonely little petunia in a potato patch up here in the brain, and I would like to do whatever you want me to do." You know? Yeah. So, you and your... Ooh, dear, dear, dear. You and your unwise ways do not maintain a record book of your dreams. You see, if your dreams don't instantly come true, or if they come true and you don't notice it, you don't know what your dreams are. You don't remember what your dreams are. You don't have a little notebook that says, "My dreams." You are not a queen, what's her name, who
Latifah.
Is...
Latifah.
Latifah. You're not Queen Latifah in the last holiday. And she had her book of possibilities. And what was the book changed to at the end?
Reality.
The
Book of Reality.
But she had her book of possibilities. She was at least going in the right direction. And she had pictures not only of reality or possibilities or whatever. She created her own images and her illusions. She went down to the photo store and she said, "I want you to put these two people together, and I want them to be holding the ring finger of the other person with that wedding ring on there. And I want 1,000 shots of it." No, just one shot. And then here's another picture. I want this here. And here they're riding in the car after the wedding, and her veil is flying in the breeze or something. And I want pictures of them. And she's never married the guy. She never even talked to the guy. She never even asked the guy. He never asked her. He would like to have asked her, but she had her, what?
Dream.
Her book of...
Reality.
Possibilities. Yes. Her book of... The realities came later. But it was a book of possibilities. And so she had this book. Did she get anything?
Yes.
She got everything. She had a few little shake-ups along the way, which... She would keep looking up at heaven and saying, "God, why are you doing this to me? Why are you giving me all this good fortune when I'm going to die in just a few days?" Well, she was misdiagnosed. Now, my goodness sakes, isn't that one of the most beautiful illustrations of misuse of the principle? The principle says, "You're going to die because the diagnosis says so. The scan said so. It's right there." It's a used scan, you know. It doesn't speak very well for used scan, but it's a used scan. And so it's not very good. And she believed it. And then she acted upon it. But she did not act, oh, tragic, tragic, tragic. She said, I'm going out like a storm. I'm going out and I'm going to have a ball. What did she say to the banker?
I'm going to blow it all.
He says, I suppose a woman of your background and your experience and your talents and what have you, you're going to use this money very wisely. And she took it in her hands and lovingly held it. And she says, yes, I'm going to blow it all. And it was so lovely, you know, so beautiful, so fantastic. Now, I have such a wonderful memory. I have such a wonderful mind. I have such a wonderful memory. I have such a wonderful mind. I am God, God I am. I have such a wonderful memory. I am God, God I am. I have such a wonderful mind. Now, I remember her name was Queen. And that's her offstage name. Her onstage name was what? Ha! We just said, I have such a wonderful memory. No, goodness sakes. Her onstage name was, what? Miss what? What was the guy's name? Boy, oh boy, it's a good thing you're not writing scripts. And me too. But you see, it was a great show. It was a great show because it had all of the Shakespearean qualities to it with the tragedy in it. And then she looks up at the ceiling in the lobby of the hotel and she says to the girl behind the counter, did you ever see anything more beautiful in your life? These angels painted on the ceiling and all of these beautiful chandeliers and lights. And the girl working behind the counter said, what are you talking about? Oh, no, I didn't. And then she turns her head away. Totally uninterested.
Georgia.
Huh?
Georgia.
Georgia Brown, huh?
God.
Yeah. Georgia what? Okay, but she looked at the ceiling and she saw the ceiling gorgeous because she had no unhappiness in her. Did you understand that? She had no unhappiness in her. She was going in, she was going out. She was going out in a barrel of roses. She was going out just a happy, happy girl. And the girl behind the counter was an ordinary clerk who worked there and made a living and did her duty. She was not taken by anything. But later, her boss came along, much later in the show, and her boss came along and said, what are you doing? She said, did you ever look at that ceiling and see how beautiful it was? And he said, get back to work. You see, this is what we do. Now, I look at my body and observe how it appears to be, and then note how certain thoughts brought about certain effects. Okay? How did I, and I know that this will, you'll say I'm not doing it sufficiently. I realize that. I realize that you will say that I am not saying it enough. But how did I ever get to have such a beautiful body? How did I ever get to have such a handsome face? How did I ever get to be so tremendously intelligent? How did I ever happen to be the essence of God manifest on earth in bliss in heaven right here now? How did I ever happen to have that? Huh?
Just the way I did.
You sought it into being.
That's good. And you said the right thing according to what our lesson is. But this is what the thing is. I am your reflection. And so if you see me as everything good, beautiful, perfect, and fantastic, you have to be that way yourself or you could not see me that way. So you mean, Herb, every time I look at a movie star and see how handsome and beautiful they are, I'm that way? That's right. And every time I look at somebody who's just utterly fantastic, that's the way I am? That's right. Every time anything happens in my world and it's good, that's the way I am? That's right. Well, what about when something happens that's not good? Well, stop looking at it. Stop looking at it. Look at the good, look at the beautiful, look at the fantastic, look at the glorious, look at the wonderful. You follow me? That's what we have to do. We have to put our attention where it is that we want to have. Now, Rochelle took us on a journey just a little bit ago, and she brought in the marching troops. Now, where did she have to go to get the marching troops? She went upstairs, didn't she? She didn't go to heaven. Well, maybe that's where her heaven is. And she went into that higher state of consciousness where the what dwell?
The stem cells.
Where do they dwell?
In heaven.
And in the higher state of consciousness, don't they? They're in that higher state of consciousness. Because those stem cells can get muddied up just as quick as kids can in a mud puddle, you know? And are the beautiful kids underneath all that mud?
Yes.
Are the stem cells underneath all of that attitude that's in our brains and in our minds that tell us that we're limited? Mm-hmm. What might we also call that? Our original what?
Purity.
Our original purity and integrity. It is underneath all of that outer limitation stuff. Now, what is the outer limitation stuff? We'll dwell on that now because that's timely. What is that outer limitation stuff? When you say you have eyes, it's a lie. It's a lie. You don't have eyes. You have eyes that you have created and called eyes, but those eyes don't see. They don't see. There are light reflections, refractions, and all that sort of stuff going on, and the eye picks up those, it's an antenna, really. It picks up those beams of light that shine off of whatever it is we're creating out there and bring it to the brain, and then the brain turns it around upside down, you know. The brain turns it in a different direction than your antenna receives it. And your brain interprets what it is. And your brain says, this is a person. This is a beautiful person. This is a not beautiful person. This is a dog, a cat, this is a house, this is whatever it sees. And it's not so. Those are labels that we have given to certain patterns of light in our mind, to certain patterns of light that we have formed in our head. Now, if you want to play the human game, and it seems like a fun game that a lot of people like to play, if you want to play the human game, then you will create things in the pattern that you have been aware of. The pattern your daddy or your granddaddy or somebody else taught you, you know, because that's what they were taught. And they don't know. They don't know. If you went to your Aunt Witchy, you know what would happen to you? You would learn all about witchcraft. You would learn all about being a person who deals with herbs and isn't this interesting? Who deals with the roots and the things of the field and the forest and so forth, and in there you'd find medicinal value, and you would learn incantations from your Aunt Witchy, and you would take those incantations and you would practice them yourself, and you would have wonderful things. You know what those incantations are? I like me. I'm divine order. I'm peace. I'm fantastic. I'm glorious. Some witches that we hear about are what we call the negative witches. They say evil, evil, evil. Well, that's okay too. Some people are witches or warlocks or whatever in the negative way, and they talk evil, evil, evil. And that's okay. Why did we create them? You don't have to associate with anybody, anything, anywhere, anytime, unless you want to. So, you're put in prison. And you're in prison with a bunch of people who are not very nice. They've done things that they shouldn't have. And they should have, because that's what they believe. And they're very naughty. And while they're in prison, they form an organization of like people. And with like people, they're working on the same project. And they're thinking of how they can build a better gun. They think in how they can do all sorts of nonsense. Well, here you are, a pure white stem cell, right there in the prison cell with all of those black stem cells. You know, you could say black stem cells. So, but there's nothing wrong with them. It's just that they're and black isn't really a nice word to use for stem cells either. So they are dirty stem cells. And dirty by our interpretation, we're meaning black is dirty, we're meaning that's dirty, so we're saying dirty stem cells. Okay, now, I hate it when the Negroes took the word black for themselves, because they just took the word black out of our vocabulary. It's like the homosexual people, they took the word gay out, and they call themselves gay, and now we can't use gay because we mean something we don't mean. When we're talking about gay, my happy is heart and light and gay. My heart is happy, light, and gay. So, well, anyhow, we know what we're talking about. So, in the prison are these naughty boys, and there are good boys there too. People who are put in prison when they shouldn't have been, and things like that. Those that happens. Okay, so here they're all mixed together. Now, will the nice boys be tainted by the naughty boys? Yes, if the nice boys are not really nice. If the nice boys are only nice because their mama said they should be nice. But if the nice boys are nice boys because that's their integrity, that's their personal integrity and their personal beingness, then they will never change. They will never be touched by the negative. Now that's quite something. When you find people going to prison and coming out pure, beautiful, lovely, glorious, fantastic, and they do. You know that person is something very special. So, you, and I'm telling you this story not because I'm trying to talk about prisons, but you have stem cells here. And these stem cells are born into your dirty brain, into your brain that is confused about what it is. Your brain thinks that it is the eye, the ear, the nose and throat and all the other good stuff. Your brain thinks that it's the heart, the lungs, the liver and all this stuff in the body. Your brain thinks that it is it, you know. What runs your lungs? The brain. What runs your heart? The brain. What runs your liver? The brain, you know. Well, now, it isn't so. What is so is the thoughts about the heart, the liver and the lungs are what run the heart, the liver and the lungs. The brain merely happens to be a bouncer backer to you of what you think, believe, or know about yourself. So, you go to your doctor, and your doctor says, "Amen. Pack it up, boy. You got 2 weeks to live." "Oh, come on, doctor. I'm healthy as a horse." "Well, you're a sick horse, and you don't know it, you know. But, no, doctor, there's nothing wrong with me." "Yes, there is. You have blubbly boo boo, you know." But I don't have blubbly boo boo. I don't even know what blubbly boo boo is." "Well, personally, sir, I don't know what blubbly boo boo is either, but you've got it because the book says you got it and you got the symptoms, and so therefore you got it." "But, doctor, I could not have blubbly boo boo, and just because the symptoms are there, that doesn't mean I have to have it." "No, I say you got it, and I say prepare for the Reaper. He'll be along in just a couple of weeks to pick you up." And you say, "Doctor, what a way to talk." "Well, hey, I'm just being practical, you know. Just take care of your money and take care of your bills and take care of your relationships so that you feel happy about going, and then go. Well, if I have to go, who cares about what I leave behind? You know, who cares? I can go out and have a ball, and nobody will say the difference, you know." Well, whatever turns you on. So then you're like... George Brown. You're like Georgia. And I think Brown is probably your last name. And so Georgia says, "Hey, if I have to go and I feel good, I'm going to go in style, in real style. I'm going to do all the things I always wanted to do, even that are bad for me, like eating all those luscious meals and eating all those wonderful things." She wasn't interested in drinking. She had a little glass of wine. She wasn't interested in smoking. She wasn't interested. And then what happened to her? Everything came her way because she released her request for it. She just lived it. She lived that peace and beauty and wholeness. What a metaphysical movie, you know, really fantastic. Now, what did she go out and cry for it and die for it and wish for it? No, even when she was going to die, she was a little intrepidous about standing on the ledge of the window, you know. She didn't mind jumping off of the bridge because she had a parachute, and you know, very few people died. Some did, but very few, you know. But what courage that girl had, you know. But this is the wonderful thing about us. Now, what thoughts did she have about herself? What thoughts do you have about yourself? Your thoughts are who you are. Now, back to our prisoners and back to our dirty brain cells. Our brain cells are not really dirty. They are pre-directed. Your eyes say, I have 20/20 vision. I have 20/30 vision. I have 10/10 vision. I have whatever silly thing you have, you know? And what does the government say about people who have problems with their eyes? They're legally blind. Who would ever want to be called legally blind? My goodness sakes. And you can still see. You just can't read, or you can't do things that the government says you have to do if you're going to be legally blind, legally seeing, you know. But who wants to be called legally blind? My gosh, I would never go back in that doctor's office again. You know, no way. I'd call up a doctor and say, Doctor, I want your opinion of me, but I want your opinion to be my opinion. And if you're willing to give me my opinion of me, I will come in and pay your fee. But I want to be me. And the doctor says, you pay your fee, and I will say what you want to see. So you go into the doctor, and you say, Doctor, I am whole and perfect. I am just starting out in a beautiful life, and a beautiful career, and a beautiful world, and everything is marvelous. And you're all shriveled up with cancer, and you go in there, and the doctor says, hey, cool. You're whole and perfect. You're fantastic. You have a beautiful mind. You have a beautiful body. You have, everything is tucked away in there, but you can't see it. You know, you got this invisibility robe that makes you invisible from who you really are. Think about that one once. You're not invisible from what other people would see. You're invisible from what you can see of yourself. You're invisible from seeing yourself as whole and perfect, your original purity and integrity. You see? Now, I have a recall put out from my factory on invisibility cloaks. And I have this recall put out saying all invisibility cloaks have to be returned to the factory. And anyone who hangs on to an invisibility coat without permission will be sorry about it. So Ellen says, it's my coat. I paid for it. I want my invisibility cloak, and I'm going to keep it. And so we go over and visit Ellen. And she puts on her invisibility cloak. The factory said I had to send it back, and I'm not sending it back. I don't have to do anything anybody else says. I have my invisibility cloak. So she puts on her invisibility cloak, and we can't see her. And then we hear a noise. And we look, and there is the invisibility cloak. But no Ellen. She is completely invisible. She is forever invisible. She is invisible for all of life. It cannot be seen by her mother, her father, her sisters, her brothers, her aunts, her uncles and cousins, by anybody, and not even by herself. So she can't look at her body and say, gee, I better take a bath, you know. She can't look at her lips and say, I better put some lipstick on. You know, she can't do anything because she didn't turn back in her invisibility cloak, which had a fault in it. And the fault was that when you depend on it most and you play most flippantly with it and you will not cooperate with the rules of the organization that sold the coat, you lose it. But you not only lose the coat, you lose yourself. And you are now invisible. You are like a nothing. You live forever. Can you imagine living forever invisible? Can you imagine living in a human world in a totally invisible person? Nobody sees you. The cars don't even see you. You got to run out of their way. You got to be very careful because you can't be killed. But nobody can see you, and nobody can hurt you. Nobody can do anything, you know, because they can't see you. Interesting, isn't it? But this is what the rule is. The rule is, you play by the game. Now, do you want to be invisible, or do you want to be master? Does a master include invisibility? He may not be seen by others from time to time, but that doesn't mean he's invisible. You walk down the street, and you're in Campbell, you know, the big city of Campbell, and doesn't even have streets, sidewalks. It's got streets, but no sidewalks. But and you walk down the street in Campbell, and the man who runs the border patrol, he comes driving by in his car, and you've been into his office a number of times. He doesn't even see you. You walk to the side of the road, and there's a dog and a cat, and they're having a fight, and you walk right by them. They don't even see you. They don't even know you're there. You are not invisible in fact. You're just invisible by the idea that no one sees you. No one knows you're there. No one has any interest in you. You are uninteresting. And you see, now, this happens to all of us many times. You can go down New York's Madison Avenue and walk along, and then your mother can be walking in the middle of the crowd across the street, and you're walking by yourself, and you lift up your head for some reason, and you look over, Ma, what are you doing here? You know? And your mother looks back and says, none of your business. I'm being invisible, and you're not supposed to see me. I'm supposed to be going out and having a ball. I was going to go into the Chippendale program, and you stick your nose in there. You know, and so, poor mom, you know, she doesn't have any privacy. Now, I look at my body and observe how it appears to be, and then note how certain things brought about certain effects. What effects do you want in your life? What effects do you want in your body? Whatever effects you want in your body, you put there by the causes that you have in your mind. Now, do you have a perfect body? Do you have a perfect mind? Do you have a perfect attitude? Now, many of you were getting up in the morning here after our sitting for a while, and you'd stretch and you'd twist your bodies and you'd just sort of wiggle them around because your young corpse were feeling a little bit tight. And so I'm watching you and I'm thinking to myself, why do they do that? And then I get up, and I am all crooked up. I'm all, what do you want to say? I don't stand up straight, you know. And so I stand up straight and do this. And then I was walking back to the house yesterday or this morning or sometime or other, and I said to myself, why am I acting like someone who is not very agile, you know, not very, I don't want to say young or old or this or that, because I know a lot of old people who run around like spring chickens. And I know a lot of young people who act like old people, you know, the image we think of that. But then I said, hey, none of that for me. I don't need to take on somebody else's attitudes. But I did for a while. That's it. Now, is that true? Should I put it to the test? Should I stand up? Let's see what happens. Ah. So, you know, now, what do you want me to do? Float? You want me to, you want me to teleport? You want me to do fun? All right. All I got to say, you can see me standing up fine. You can see me doing these things. And by the way, you all do that now, too. None of you have any crinks in your bones. Every time you stand up, you're just like a fluid pipe standing up, just as good as new, you know. You will never see me doing anything that you cannot visualize yourself doing. And if you cannot visualize yourself teleporting, if you cannot visualize yourself levitating, if you cannot visualize yourself, you will never experience it. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi taught levitation to his classes, and they were quite successful. And many in the class levitated, and others saw them levitate and got close to it, but not quite. And so then, what's the first thing they did? They ran out and told the newspaper and television. And so the newspaper and television came in and started photographing them and started looking at them, saying, And then the people were going like this, you're bouncing up and down trying to, and that's what the television was seeing, you know. And they would they could never see those who really did levitate, who really did teleport. They couldn't see them because they didn't believe it. Because they said, no, it is inconceivable, unreasonable, it is not something we will do. And they were incredulous about it, and they could not experience it. Now, the moment you are absolutely incredulous about everything I share with you, you will experience everything I share with you. It's not me that's doing it or anything. I'm merely telling you the story of what is. Jesus only told the story of what is. And those who could believe, those who could follow it, did it. And what did he say to the centurion about his servant?
Never have I seen. It's done unto you according to your
faith. Yeah, but never.
But never have I seen a face like
yours demonstrated here in Israel. Yeah. No, what he said was that my servant is ill. Will you come? And Jesus said yes. And then he said, I don't know why he asked him to come and then asked him not to come, but then he says, you don't have to come. Just tell me what to do. I am a soldier, and I follow the rules, and my people follow whatever rules I give them. When I say jump, they jump, you know? And so if you say they're healed, they will be healed, or they are healed, or when I go home, I will find them healed. And so Jesus said, wow, I've had a bunch of disciples. I've been teaching for 3 years, and they haven't got the message like you got in one moment. What a man. What a genius. There's some good comes out of the military, you know. So he was on his way home, and on his way home, what happened? One of his staff met him on the road and said, oh, master, Joseph is whole and perfect. And the master says, thank you. I know. Thank you. It was done. Now, this is done for all of us, too. When we can have a belief that transcends all possibilities, all probabilities, all limitations into reality. And that's what George Brown did. She experienced it into reality. Are you ready for that?
Yes.
If you're ready for that, then stop feeling sorry for yourself. Because I know each one of you, and you have that sorry bug in you, and it is such a silly bug to carry, because it doesn't deserve it. It doesn't deserve it. You know, the sorry bug is just like mistletoe. Mistletoe looks so pretty. It's green all year round. Of course, it's sapping the parent, it's sapping the host and taking all of its energy and taking all of its sap and taking all of its vitality until finally the tree dies. But the mistletoe just eats it up, and it's brilliant green and lovely red berries and all that glorious stuff. And if you have the courage to climb up into the upper levels of those branches of trees and cut them off and get it all, and I don't know what to do with it. Maybe sell it in the store, spread it around or burn it or something. But get it off your property. The mistletoe will stop growing. But if you don't do it, over the oasis, we have two trees with mistletoe in it. But they're at the very top. And you have to pretty well cut down the tree, unless we ask Michael to come over with his high lift lever gadget and lift you right up there and cut it off, which is not a bad idea. And then get rid of it. But if it is left to itself, it will, in reasonable time, destroy the tree, destroy the host. So that's what being sorry for yourself does to you. It is going to destroy you, its host. Oh, you will feel, I have a right to feel sorry for myself. I have a right to be unhappy. I have a right to get angry at the world because these things are happening to me. Well, the things are happening to you because you are thinking you have a right to have mistletoe in your possession. And if you keep this feeling sorry for yourself, this mistletoe in your possession, what it's going to do It's going to destroy you. It's going to get into your system, into your blood system. It's like sap going right into the tree's blood system, and taking with it perhaps its own little seeds and germs and so forth, you know, and like a mosquito that has poisonous malaria in its jowls, and then it sticks its needle in you, and it shoves the poison into your skin and takes out your blood, because that's just the way the program goes, and then you pick up malaria. Well, now you surround yourself with the pure white light of love, and you will not be bitten by mosquitoes. You don't need mosquito cream and all this other sort of stuff, which doesn't always work. But the thing is, when you do surround yourself with your pure white light of love, then you will never be bitten. If you surround yourself with your pure white light of love, you will never feel sorry for yourself, because you will know that everything is wonderful. Everything is coming up roses. Even though you planted petunias, you're getting roses. It's all up to you. Now, what is it you want to have in your garden? Do you want mistletoe?
No.
Because feeling sorry for yourself is planting mistletoe on purpose in your consciousness. And it will completely destroy you. It'll take away all of your credibility for yourself, all your feeling of self-confidence, all your feeling of goodness, and it'll just destroy you. Just destroy you. Now, is that what you want? Is that the type of thing that is important for you? Well, if that's the type of thing that's important for you, you're in for quite an experience. Quite an experience. And not one that's going to bring you happy results either. Take a look here further. I look at my body and see it as an illusion. Then I create it as a new illusion of my current choice. You look at your body and you say, yeah, it's okay, you know, it's healthy, you know. I'm not covered with rashes or with mosquito bites or I'm not covered with whatever, you know. It's okay. And my hair is okay, my eyes are okay, my ears and nose and so forth and throat and all that good stuff are okay. My heart beats in a regular manner, you know. I'm still alive. I can still walk around, I can still do things. No, that's not bad. Okay, there should be no argument. The minute you concentrate on any one little incident in your body, you exacerbate that incident into a high level of consciousness, and it thinks that it's the king. You say, oh, I have migraine headaches, I have migraine headaches. When I get a migraine headache, I can't do a thing. I can't think, I can't act, I can't. You see, you made the king. The migraine headache became a king in your life. And you empower it, and you shower it with gifts. Things that you think you're going to take it away. You shower it with all sorts of aspirins and other things that you think you're going to reduce your migraine headache. What's going to reduce your migraine headache?
My thought.
Yeah.
A pure
thought. Yeah.
One stem cell.
Yeah. What's going to reduce your migraine headache?
I like me.
I am divine order, I am peace.
I put my attention somewhere else.
Yes. Exactly. Yes. You put your attention somewhere else. I am peace, I am this, I am divine order. All those things are good. But if you still feel your migraine headache, then you haven't put your thought somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Now, any time the migraine headache comes to your attention, instead of giving it any power, you immediately say to yourself, I'm whole and perfect. You immediately say, all my organ action function, my bodies are fantastic, my body, one body at a time. And you do that, and you're fantastic. And you say, I'm so relaxed. I'm so relaxed. And migraine headaches flourish on tension, on anxiety, on panic. And if you take out the underpinnings, take out the tension, the feeling of anxiety, take out all of those areas that give the migraine an opportunity to grow, like the mistletoe, then what happens? It dies. You cut the mistletoe out of the tree, and the tree doesn't have the mistletoe. You cut the migraine out of the head, well, that means you got to take the brain out. Well, hardly, but you think you do. So, but what have you been feeding? All right, we've just said this, now we'll say it again. Upon what does a migraine headache feed?
Tension.
All right. And if you give it balance, love, peace, harmony, joy, what's going to happen to it? It's going to go away for lack. Hey, I'm not getting fed here. And really, that's just what it is. I'm not getting fed here, and it goes away. Now, I tell you, one of the best ways to get rid of a migraine headache. A migraine headache comes because you have anxiety and you're upset and you don't know what you're upset about. I mean, you can be upset about something you don't even know you're upset about. So, the migraine headache comes. So, the first thing you do is you say, migraine headache, come on, we're going to have a bowl of chocolate ice cream with chocolate fudge on top of it, and we're going to have that white cream on the top of that, and then we're going to sit down and have a cup of coffee with that, and we're just going to sit down and enjoy this. And the migraine headache said, that's not my thing. And you said, no, what's your thing? I'd like a little strychnine. Well, I'm sorry, we don't have any strychnine today. So you'll have to go somewhere else. Well, if you're not going to carry what I want and what I need, I'm not going to stick around here. If you're not going to carry anxiety and unhappiness, and if you're going to carry the feelings that you're rotten and you're terrible and you're mean and you don't deserve to live, if you don't carry those thoughts, I don't want to be here. And we say, hurrah, hurrah, hurrah. We don't say get out. We just don't feed it. As long as you feed your Uncle Jed and he comes in there half dead, and if he comes in there drinking all that juice and smoking those cigars and messing up your house and telling dirty stories in front of your children and stuff like that, and in front of you, if you're going to let him be there, but how do you keep Uncle Jed from coming in?
Feed him vegetables.
You would. You take away his door key for one thing, and then, like Gregor says, then you feed him healthy foods. You feed him vegetables, you take away the booze, you take away the cigars, but those are my cigars. And you take this box of $100 cigars, because, you know, he's really into it. You take the box of $100 cigars and you put them in the incinerator. Dung! Gone. But, out into the atmosphere goes $100 cigar smoke all over your neighborhood and they're not even paying for you. And then you do all those things. But you're not mean to him. You don't say, I hate you. Because if you hate him, then you hate yourself. But you just say, well, around here we have the Clean Air Act. And everyone speaks beautiful thoughts, speaks beautiful words, breathes beautiful fragrance, you know, like roses and daisies and carnations. And we don't have any type of wine. We don't have any type of liquor in this house. This house is just the most pure, pure, pure place in the world. Well, how did I get in here in the first place? Well, because my husband was getting over it. Your husband was getting over it? Yeah. Well, what happened? Well, he didn't get over it fast enough, and so he went away. Well, what do you mean he went away? Well, we got a divorce. You got a divorce? Oh! No wonder I hadn't seen him around here. Well, that's right. And I don't talk about it. I mean, he was an unhappy experience in my life. He wouldn't stop smoking. He wouldn't stop drinking. He wouldn't stop swearing. He wouldn't stop doing things that I didn't approve of in my home. Why I got him in the first place is because I was excited about him. You know, these things all seemed so exciting. But once I brought them into my life, they were no longer exciting. They were just not my thing. And so I told him, I'm sorry. I will have to find a different husband who doesn't smoke, doesn't drink, doesn't swear, doesn't do all these things. He says, well, I'll stop. And she says, okay, I'll give you a day to try it in. And so he tries it for a day, and it's not his thing. He doesn't know how to stop because it's his way of doing things differently. And so, out. But you say, well, now, boy, that's rather tough. No, it isn't. Rochelle is standing there, and her friend is smoking, and the friend throws the cigarette down the ground, and they're both talking, not paying attention. And Rochelle is standing there in, now you're going to get the point, she's standing there in a little hill of grass, you know, a little bit of dried up grass, and the cigarette lands in the grass, and they're talking and talking, and the next thing you know, Rochelle says, ah! And she'd get burning up, because the grass has started on fire. So the cigarette has started the grass on fire and started burning Rochelle's feet. And she leaps out of the grass and she says, I have to get away from there. And I have to get away from cigarettes. I will never see a cigarette again in my life because I don't choose to, because it just almost burned me up. You know, no good excuse, you know, to be real tough. And so the girlfriend says, well, I'm sorry, but I smoke. Well, I'm sorry, but I have a fetish now about cigarettes. I can't stand to be around cigarettes. Anyone who has a cigarette in their purse, in their pocket, I just go crazy. And of course, not really, but you put on a good show. And so if she loves you, she'll leave her cigarettes at home. And if she loves you, she probably even stops smoking. And if she loves you, she'll probably live a lot longer without smoking, you know? So, but that's neither here nor there. A lot of people live a long time who smoke very much, and a lot of people don't. Why did people stop living a long time when they were smoking?
Because they were told they wouldn't.
The new rule came out. You die if you smoke. Before that, they smoked their heads off and never died, you know? And it's true. It's true. And the stuff that they smoked before, including the Indians, the stuff that they smoked was rotten. My goodness. It had no filters on it. It had no nothing on it. But they built this up over a period of time. First came the filters and the long sticks and the stuff that they put them on. But you see, your body is so wonderful. You don't need an excuse to keep it perfect. But you sometimes need an excuse to walk out of a situation that you have allowed to build up in your world that is not harmonious for your best interest. And you have to be very definite. Now, do you think Rochelle is ever going to let anyone come into her presence, even her mommy and daddy, if such were the case, and smoking cigarettes? Every time she'd see a cigarette, she'd think, oh, I got burned! No way, you know? No way. And you know, isn't it interesting? People fall asleep with cigarettes in their hand, in their beds, and their bed starts on fire, and they get up, they put out the fire, and then they go back to bed. You know, they will not acknowledge that the cigarette caused the fire. The firemen acknowledge it, but they won't acknowledge that. And they will not give it up. And they will still go to sleep. And they will take their grandchildren in their arms and smoke and fall asleep with the grandchildren in their arm and burn a hole in their shirt. And they're holding their grandchild right there on their arm. And, you know, somewhere some values get crossed here. And the value is, what's your value? What's your value? You say, I would never do a thing like that. If I had my grandchild here, I wouldn't smoke, and I wouldn't give him secondhand smoke, and I wouldn't, you know, endanger his health. You do it all the time. You do it all the time. You're driving your car, and the children are arguing in the back seat. You say, shut up, sit down, pay attention. Now, why are you making such a mess? And you turn around, why are you doing this? And you crunch into a tree, you know? What does a mama do who has a family that hasn't quite got the message? She stops the car. She pulls off the freeway and stops the car. And she says, children, there's a new law. And the law is that every child wears a seatbelt. And the younger children are in the back and the older children are in the front. And never the two shall meet. No. And so now, we will put the old, younger children, which is a stupid thing. You think the younger children be up front where you could be with them, but it's further from harm's way, I guess. And so you have the younger children buckled down in the back on the far end of each seat so they don't disturb each other. And then the older children are in the front where you can handle them better, and they're buckled down too. And then you say, this is an ultimatum. If any of you act up, I am going to park the car and call a cab and go home. and you're going to stay here in the car by yourself. I am not going to have anything to do with you. Mom, Mom, you wouldn't do that. Mom, you wouldn't do that, would you, Mom? Yes, I would. Now, if you want to try me out, you go right ahead, and I'll show you. I got my cell phone here. I'll call a cab. I have the cab number that I use for calling the cab occasionally. So if you want to do that, I'll do that. But Mom, that's threatening us. Mom, that's abusing us mentally. That's messing up our minds. And Mom says, well, either you're mind or you're behind. Now, which do you want? And so they wake up and they realize that she's serious. But you see, it takes a lot of guts on Mom's side to do that, or Pop's. It takes a lot of guts because we are so used to just letting them do it, letting them do it. It doesn't make any difference. Go in the back seat and kill each other. That's okay. I don't want anything to do with it. You know, my dad, there were five of us kids, and he bought a Pierce Arrow. And a Pierce Arrow is a luxury limousine that's used by very, very, very rich people at that time. And this was a second-hand limousine, but very, very, very rich people who had roll-up windows between the back seat and the front so the driver didn't listen to the conversation in the back. And then there's a telephone in the back to call the driver and tell the driver if you wanted to tell him anything. So what did we do with that car? It had the three sitting in the back and the two fold-down seats, and then the two seats in front. And so Mom and Pop sat in front, rolled up the window, and all five of us were in the back. And we knew that it would be hell or heaven, depending upon what we made it. So we decided to call it a song fest. So all the way, 30 miles out to our lake cottage, 30 miles, all the way out to the lake cottage, going, 25, 30 miles an hour or something like that in those days, we sang songs. And we had so many wonderful songs. And if we couldn't figure out one, that the beer bottles on the wall, you know, and the telephone poles that go by and other things, and counting the cows by their legs or counting the cows by one leg. And then, well, what about the four teats, you know? You got the four legs and the four teats. And then, you know, we had songs and stories going. I'm sure every family does that. But take responsibility. Do you understand? Now, if you have to keep your house clean by getting rid of Uncle Jed, then get rid of him. If you have to keep the house clean by getting rid of Dad or Mom, get rid of him. If you have to keep the house clean by you moving, then move. If you have to move into a lesser place, move into a lesser place. But do not stay where the vibrations are not the way that you want them to be. Because if you live in the slop of sloppy vibrations, you're going to have a life filled with all of the illnesses you can want. I have had many of my students and clients, more clients than students, many of my clients who were very, very wealthy people, very, very wealthy people, just wonderful. They had everything, and they were very, very sick, and they were dying. And I told them, I said, your anxiety, your hatred for your family, one member or another or all of them, you know, is going to kill you. And your family will be delighted when you're gone. Oh no, they'll be sorry. Hey, they're going to get your money. They're going to be delighted when you're gone. They're not going to have to wait around. They're not going to have to hope that you'll give them something. They'll just be happy. Oh no, they won't. Oh no. Oh yes, they will. I said, now, you put a new cause in motion and say, I'm whole and perfect. And then you put another cause in motion and you say, I have the most wonderful family in the world. I love them dearly. I have the most wonderful sons and daughters, husband, wife, grandchildren, whomever in the world. The most wonderful. And if you do that, you will find that you will enjoy living and you will live in a healthy body. And so I can cite a dozen, but I won't give you any names, but I can cite a dozen of these people that I worked with in that way who responded to my request and suggestion, and they were back with their families in virtually no time. They were out of the hospital. They were whole and perfect. They were free. Nobody even knew that they had the disease that they went into the hospital for, or that they were even in the hospital. That was a spiritual healing. But in the same light, they absolutely forgot me, and never said thank you, never sent me a couple million dollars or anything like that, but they just went on, and I am so delighted, really, I am so delighted, because it was really a beautiful spiritual type healing that they had, which left them absolutely magnificent. Now, you say, well, can't you do some near spiritual healings that can bring a little money in and do a little of this? Hey, I'm not hurting. I'm always coming out on top. There's always enough. There's always more than enough, really. And I'm very happy. People don't feel they should share their money with the university or with me and stuff like that. And hey, that's cool. As long as they're happy and they're fantastic, all they have to do is share one thing with me. Share their unconditional love. When they share their unconditional love with me, they don't need to give me one other thing, because I have everything. And I always will have everything, and you will too. When you share unconditional love, you will have everything, and everything will be yours, and you'll have everything to give, and you'll have everything to get. I know I was working with our friend Herbert Marty the other day, and Herbert says, well, I sold my business, and I've done this, and I've done that. And he says, now, Herb, we've got to send you a check, too. And so he wrote a very proper check for us and sent it to Gertrude and put it in our account. And we said, thank you very much. But you see, I had not even dreamed about that, that he would give us part of his money that he had from selling his business and stuff. It never dawned on me. I treated with him that he would have the proper sale of his business, that everything would work out in divine order, that everything would be beautiful. And it did. It just did. He gave a large amount to his son and his daughter, and his wife got half, and they're both exceedingly happy, and they are now more harmonious as a couple than when they were married. They're just fantastic. They're just joyous and loving each other. And they don't want to move in together because they're having too much fun apart, you know. But they love each other. They like it. They like to have family activities where all of them are together. And you see, I'm telling you this story because this is not what I would call a spiritual healing story. Because a spiritual healing story, nobody would know anything. They would not even know that they had had a problem after they were solving all of their little details. But, you see, they didn't have a problem. Their problem was just getting along with each other and having a happy life. Now, he has a very happy life. Is he doing good? Fine. But, you see, this is what you guys are doing. This is what you guys are doing. Now, are you having a good life? Are you healthy, hearty? Are you living in bodies that are absolutely glorious, just like a ray of sunshine? Are you living in minds that are brilliant, crisp, sharp, filled with, I have such a wonderful memory, I have such a wonderful mind, I have such a wonderful memory, I have such a wonderful mind, I am God, God I am, I have such a wonderful memory, I am God, God I am, I have such a wonderful mind. Sing it.
I have such a wonderful memory, I have such a wonderful mind. I have such a wonderful memory. I have such a wonderful mind. I am God, God I am. I have such a wonderful memory. I am God, God I am. Such a wonderful mind.
Now all together. I have such a wonderful memory. I have such a wonderful mind. I have such a wonderful memory. I have such a wonderful mind. I am God, God I am. I have such a wonderful memory. I am God, God I am. I have such a wonderful mind. Now, whether we like it or not, you're going to take a pause. said, we'll come back about five after. And I think we got a good start on today's lesson, don't you?
Yes.
Okay, I love you.
Love you.
Okay.